This is Deal Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. My guest today on Church and Culture comes to us from Burton, Ohio, although she's originally from Florida. Shalimar Masters. Yeah, that's Shalimar. I believe that's a name for a perfume as well. She's married to Corey, and they have 10 kids. And Shalimar's website is lifevictorious.com, lifevictorious.com. Shalimar, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you, Dale. Thanks for having me.
Am I right about there being a perfume called Shalimar?
You are so right. That's what I'm named after. Yes.
Well, I remember an ex-girlfriend of mine had it, and I really liked it.
Yes, my mother and my grandmother wore it, but thankfully my middle name is Therese, so that I could be baptized in a Catholic name. But yes, that is exactly what I'm named after, the perfume.
Now, you recently moved with your family, your husband, and 10 kids to Amish country, Burton, Ohio. You said you had a friend who was entering a Byzantine monastery.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Yes. We are Roman Catholics by baptism, marriage, and all of that. But we became familiar with the Byzantine rite when we lived in Colorado, in Denver. And we started driving up there and fell in love with the way the divine liturgy was said. And I met this beautiful, sweet teacher. And her name was Victoria, and we became great friends. And we ended up just realizing it was time for a change for our family. It was just the right timing. A lot of things sort of added up. I got pregnant with my 10th when we were looking into a hysterectomy because I was being tested for uterine cancer. There were all kinds of miracles. And but here's Victoria. She said, I'm going to Ohio. I'm going to Burton. And now she is Sister Natalia at Christ the Bridegroom Monastery. And we literally put it onto our GPS.
Huh.
And we went back to our adventurous days. You know, get a little less adventurous.
Well, let me ask you, Shalimar, how big a vehicle do you have to have?
We have a 15 passenger van, and in Colorado Springs, it was known as the home school van. We found out after moving to Ohio, it's called the Amish taxi. So,
oh, yeah, you're in Amish country, so you're not the only one with a lot of
Amish
kids.
Country. Yeah, so everyone else who has a white van out here, they're taxiing Amish around. So we get here, and there's Amish people. They walk, you know, they ride their buggies, and they're all waving at us. And we thought, you know, okay. Very wonderful people, very wonderful community. But we came out here, and here we are, and next thing you know, joined a parish out in Brecksville, Ohio, St. Joseph's Byzantine Catholic Church. I have to clarify, it's a Catholic. We follow are under the Pope of Rome.
The Byzantine rite of the Roman Catholic Church.
The Roman Catholic Church, yes. And that community has just become our family. They are just tremendous. They are about an hour, they're closer to Cleveland than where we are, so we drive there an hour to go there. We also visit the monastery. Our eldest daughter is discerning a vocation. That's another big reason.
Now, what's the age range of your 10 children?
Well, our youngest is 1, and our eldest is 17.
Yeah. You kind of like the royal family. You just
well,
you gotta make sure there's an heir to the throne.
Yeah, right? Well, six of them are boys, so we told them, somebody here has got to make some money, because as parents, our wealth is in our children, our faith. Financially, that gets a little dicey with a large family.
Well, there's different kind of riches, as you well know.
Perfect.
And at this point, I want to tell our listeners, other than the fact of your very interesting life, which is far from over, just really beginning, I want to tell our listeners that Shalimar is quite a remarkable writer. I went to her website, lifevictorious.com, at the suggestion of my friend and assistant, Claire Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And I read through her blog posts, and I was completely won over. I found myself laughing, nodding my head, underlining, bolding, just phrase after phrase. And there is a lot of, I would say, there is a group of themes in these blog posts that I want to discuss with you, and I think that our listeners will be very appreciative of it. And the way I want to open the conversation is to quote one of your better lines, although there are many, many good lines here. You really have a gift for coining the phrase, as they put it. And this one is, you said, "You have failed at cyberspace." What do you mean that you failed at cyberspace?
I have many failures. Cyberspace, I'm trying to think, was this from a blog post?
Yeah, about over a year ago.
Okay.
Well, let me refresh your memory.
Okay.
You were, and this is a constant through your blogs, talking about social media. And how you'll open Pinterest or Facebook or any of them, and you see all this happiness staring and success, mm-hmm. and wealth and well-being and perfect lives and happy marriages staring you in the face.
Yeah.
And you don't really think it's real, do you?
No, I and thank you so much for refreshing my memory. I should read my blog once in a while. I really refresh it, but it's true. I think there's this huge market for it's so easy these days to present what's not true to kind of Hollywood eyes, what even in big families, but not so much. I think with filters and iPhones and all of the we have a son learning coding right now for internet because boy, I need that. It's so easy to present on social media what isn't true in order to gain followers or to have admirers or whatever it is. And what had me start this back, I'm trying to think when I started this blog.
Well, let me give you a quote here.
You say,
"I wake up in the morning to beautiful pose with perfectly photographed, perfectly arranged flowers and families and hair and DIY home projects and positive messages and life hacks and outfits I can't afford."
Yes. It's so true. It's so true. And it's so easy these days to just look at, there's so much on media. It's not even just Facebook or blogs. There was a huge blog time, which is still going. Websites, there's so much out there that you just look at it. I just look at a birthday cake on Pinterest and I think, if I can get a $1 box of Betty Crocker.
Go to Costco.
It might work. Yeah, Costco.
Yeah. Well, I get the sense, although you don't come out and say it, that you think that social media is making people unhappy.
I do because it seems like a race. Like we're all supposed to be competing. Like, I love my husband more than you. I've got everything together. People filter things out. They make things look perfect.
Look how many pictures of me and my husband hugging and smiling, right?
Exactly. And it leaves out, you know, I can get a little deeper with this, but I...
Please do.
In real life, yes.
Because I'm going to force you to, because I'll start quoting what you've written.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
And it's all here, boy. It all hangs out. You say, for example, you said, the internet has thrown us into a game where we can't really win unless we're in that same 2% where there will always be winners, the ones that get lucky, that go pleasantly viral, the ones who have something to brag about in reality.
Yes, that is true. That is true.
I'm almost afraid to ask you what you think of my Facebook page.
It's wonderful because it's not so fuzzy. I started this blog because it was back in the Yahoo group days, before Facebook was so big and social media and Twitter and all of that was so big. There was just such a competition. I'm looking at this as a wife, you know, who actually is still homeschooling some of my children. And it was like a big competition fest that was going on. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I've been to your house. That's not even true. And what happened, what I love about your page, Deal, is that it's right there. Here we go. This is what's actually happening. And I think that's been a hunger in our country.
Yeah, I share what I love, whether it's good books, good movies.
Yes.
Stories about my golf game. which I might present in a little bit too positive a light, but you don't understand that. You have
a little of that.
Yeah, there's a little of that. But you have you say you're part of the millions of people who wake up in the morning and are nervously happy that the lights are still on, that my marriage relation is still somehow intact, and so forth. And you know, I totally relate to that. I mean, what we see on social media or what we put up, we don't put up the anxiety, we don't put up the despair, we don't put up the depression, we don't put up the fear of death, we don't put up the insecurity, the uncertainty, the anxiety. That just doesn't seem to be what we put up, and probably for good reason, right?
Yes, because when we do, we get a flood of, oh, that's so negative, you know, no one wants to hear that, just stop. And I do understand there's a balance. There is a balance of reality, and because I am much of a realist in my faith, because I'm looking at, you know, you got the crucifixion and you've got the resurrection. It's both. You can't just talk about only the happy thing that comes with hope, you know, in eternity. But there's this pressure to make everything look good until, and this is what inspired me to start all of this probably about 10 years ago, is that the people in my very strong Catholic circle, I'll say, back in my former community, were so positive on social media up until the day of divorce.
Oh, wow. That you knew a couple like that?
Oh, I knew plenty of them. There were so many. They would happy, 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 boom, court. I was like, whoa, why didn't I see this coming? Happy, 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 suicide. I mean,
oh, no.
I did not know people personally. And I thought, you know, there is a need for people to be real, yet not with the dirty laundry that causes scandal just for the purpose of scandal. Like, oh, look at that horrible person that, you know, that doesn't serve much of a, who wants to read that all day either, you know. It's like there's a reality about my own life that others, my goal is to encourage others like me. They'll look at me and I'll cancel them out every time. Oh, your family is Oh, you're
so okay. Now I
so well
Shalimar.
Yes.
By the way, I love your name because it brings back great memories. But I used to go out and buy bottles of that stuff from my girlfriend.
That was a lucky girlfriend.
And so I think she was actually a fiance for a while, but I forget.
Well, and Shalimar, yes.
Now, I've looked at your page, and you take the same picture of yourself over and over. I mean, honestly, I was going through all your pictures because I had read your stuff about social media, right?
Yeah.
And so all your pictures are headshots, and you're smiling, and you look beautiful. You look great. But it's a repetition of the same picture over and over. Are you aware of that?
Oh, I'm totally aware of it. I actually deleted most of my pictures because it just causes I'm still getting the balance. The more following I get on there,
Well, you evidently get some men coming after you one way or the other, right? Do you really?
There's this section of, are you talking about Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay, because I have not updated my blog. That's my embarrassment and my failure at cyberspace right there.
Well, we're going to talk about you doing more writing here in a minute, because that's one reason I got you on the show, because you're a very talented writer and you need to do more of it, okay?
Oh, thank you.
You do. You really do. And don't lose the casual, very personal style of writing, which is also, I mean, it's very clever. You have a real natural knack for writing. So don't lose that.
Thank you. That's exactly what I need to hear.
Well, I mean, we all need encouragement, believe me.
I don't know how you do it.
Every now and then I'll get somebody email me about my show and radio show and how much they enjoy it. And I, you know, yes, thank you. You know,
you need that shot in the arm.
You know, I think that people, generally speaking, when somebody has done something well, whether it's a radio show or written a book or an article, they assume the person who did it knows it, is aware of it, and doesn't need to be told that they did a good job. I think that's where people are. Now, I have gotten in the habit in the last 5 or 6 years, perhaps earlier, but now I do it very consistently, that every time I read a good book or a good article or something, I find that person's, whether it's their email or their Twitter feed, and I tell them thank you. And I've got responses from composers in Ireland, you know,
wow,
all kinds of people around the world. I just send them a simple one-line message, you know, and they're thrilled to get it.
They you need that, yes.
But because there are very famous people who don't hear much about how the impact of their work. It's really quite stunning, some of the people who I've talked to. So we all need encouragement.
Yeah.
And it's especially someone like you who's got 10 kids on your hands and a husband who you don't always like very much, according to your blog. And which is, I think, beautifully said. You have a wonderful blog where you talk about you're having a fight one night and you sort of came to the resolution was, well, I'm here and you're here and we're here.
We're here.
You know, we haven't taken, as you put it, the easy way out.
Correct.
Which is to be somewhere else.
Correct.
And that's very wise, I think. Now, so what you really do is you open up, it's not a reality show because you're not bathing in it. But
right,
there's an honesty there that most Catholic writers can't expose themselves in that way. I mean, you talk about Pat Madrid's a friend of yours, a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Hahn's a friend of yours, a friend of mine. I mean, Scott Hahn and Pat Madrid can't get on a blog and talk about how their marriage is in danger or
right,
or you know, they're fighting every day or, you know, Scott Hahn's wife hit him over the head with a book or something, you know, because he got so many of them. Maybe she said, no more books, Scott, you know. And so
they can't say it publicly anyway.
No. And so, I mean, they can't because people expect these public figures to be, you know, upstanding, virtuous people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what you're, what you say is that you have a blog about secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying we all have secrets.
Yes.
We all have secrets that belie the appearances that we project. So what's your big secret, Shalimar?
My big secret is that I am wearing a shower towel on my head right now. That's my big secret. And I want to explain the picture thing because I think...
So you were so excited about talking to me today, you decided
I
to...
I was. I thought, I'm going to get... Because here's the reality of the mother with 10 children, a husband who just lost his job, unfortunately. However, that happens. He's an accountant, and a lot of times this happens after tax season.
And this is Corey.
This is Corey, and he's...
So Corey, by the way, our listener, any of our listeners in northeastern Ohio, Corey Masters, accountant, needs a job. And you can get in touch with me, and I'll put you in touch with Shalimar. Or message her on Facebook.
He's actually on Facebook, but he's not very active on that because he's working on... He decided, you know, I'm going to have my own accounting firm because... Working for people, what they'll do with someone with his skills, he's an MBA, they'll take all his taxes, does all the stuff for them, and they're like, thank you very much. And it's like, you know, but it's not the bad mouth.
May I make the observation that you two seem quite attracted to each other?
We're crazy.
I mean, 10 kids in 17 years?
Well, we're pro-life. Well,
you're pro a lot of things.
We're pro a lot of things. we're not romantic. We are not. And that's what I wanted.
You're not romantic?
Oh, you have all these children. I said, my gosh, there was a blizzard. What the heck? I mean,
you're blaming it on the weather.
I mean, we're just, of course, or the stork or whatever. I mean, no, we are... We are...
I hope you don't move to Maine. I mean...
That's funny. No, I would have 20. We love children. We started being friends. He was the first gentleman. I went out with many, and this will come in the book coming out. My reversion story, when I came back to the faith, I moved to a mission. I went from wealth to mission, and then met Corey, and we became friends. He was volunteering. He was in the Navy. He was a Navy pilot, and he was volunteering in a soup kitchen, but would also come to this mission where I was at full time. And basically, we unified on we wanted 10 children.
Now, wait a minute. You just told me something I didn't know. You have a book coming out?
It's Pat Madrid's book. It's coming out May 18th, and it's called Surprised by Life. And I hope I'm allowed to say that. I know he advertises it's on pre-order right now.
Wait a minute. This radio show exists to help people get their books out. So it's Shalimar Masters coming out May 18th, shortly. Surprised by Life, and whose publisher?
Let me think. I'm trying to figure this out.
Was it Sophia Press?
Yeah, there's Crisis. Yes. I couldn't.
Know that I ran Crisis Magazine for 12 years?
Oh, we know very well, because when we were first married, Corey was obsessed with this thing. And I was like, what is that? I had never heard of a Latin Mass. I said, what is all this? I didn't know EWTN, and our honeymoon was on a cruise with...
Don't tell me you watched me on your honeymoon on TV.
No. Corey knew all of this stuff because he was discerning the priesthood, and I was like, what? What are all the best...
You talked him out of the priesthood?
Well, I have very strong sales abilities.
Evidently. So this is coming out from Sophia Press?
Yes.
That's wonderful news. I'm so glad.
Isn't that great? And it's actually not my book. It's Patrick Madrid's book. I have a chapter in the
book. You have a chapter in Patrick's book?
A hilarious title. Yes, he edited it, and he gave it the most funny. I'm so grateful for it. He's hilarious. And he's... But yes, I had a big reversion.
Okay, now what? Wait a minute. What's the name of your chapter in the book?
Oh no, it's like made my face turn red because I'm like, ah, what are you doing? It's called Bye Bye Boys and Booze. That's correct.
That's so Pat Madrid. Okay, so to clarify, Pat Madrid has a book coming out from Sophia Press, edited, called Surprised by Life, with a chapter by Shalimar Masters. Now we're going to be back with Shalimar Masters right after this brief message. I am back with Shalimar Masters, who is delightful. She and her husband Corey and 10 kids live about an hour east of Cleveland in Amish country in Burton, Ohio. She's got a chapter in a book coming out, edited by Pat Madrid from Sophia, called Surprised by Life. And Shalimar, to go back to one of your excellent blogs on your Life Victorious blog site, evidently you and Corey were having a rough time during your marriage at some point, and maybe more than once. And several people tried to give you a book called Love and Respect, which you say did you absolutely no good. Why is that?
No. Because they were all trying to sell me into network marketing. It is like the book in network marketing. I'm not kidding. It is like they passed this thing out as well as Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's like, okay, well, Love and Respect just does not... I have a hard time putting down any book because I'm sure it works for somebody, but not when you're at a depth where you see your marriage as a vocation. This is not some sort of formula. If he says this and I do that, then it's going to bring up this. And I actually read it twice, tried it several times, and he was like, huh? And I thought, well, okay, gave him away, threw him out. I don't know. It just didn't hit where.
What do you think of the habit that some people have of when people are in real serious problems, depression, failure, shame, whatever, that people hand them a book?
I think it's like what you mentioned before, that almost an easy way out. It takes them, it relieves them of some sort of responsibility over your problem. Like when you're having a true issue, and definitely I have dealt with depression throughout my life since I was a young child.
As have I.
Oh goodness, I am so sorry.
Half the people I interview on this show, you know, will testify to their struggle with depression.
What?
And it's so common.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know a famous Catholic writer once wrote, if you're not depressed in this world, something's wrong with you.
Yes, amen. Amen. And that's part of the problem with love and respect, as if we're not supposed to have marital difficulties. Or in fact, I have some wonderful priest friends and friends that are sisters, religious sisters, that we're always supposed to be happy. We're always supposed to be up, and it's such a worldly message.
Well, you know, that's not what happiness is. You know that. I mean, I wrote a book on happiness, Shalimar. I wrote a whole book on it, which has been completely ignored. But that's okay.
Okay.
I like being an author, Pat said. But you know, happiness throughout history has been living a certain kind of life of virtue and respect, and not a feeling state, not a buzz, not a high. That's not what happiness is at all anyway. So we've put this incredible burden on people's backs when we think they've got to be quote-unquote happy all the time, when that's not even what happiness is.
Oh, amen. I would love to read that. I think you definitely worded that much better than I was.
I probably worded it better than I did in the book,
which is
perhaps why it didn't. It was an academic
book.
It's
beautiful. And you put the word pressure. That is what I felt throughout my life as a mother, as someone with, we get enough pressure from the world just being in the faith, but now you add on a bunch of kids, you add on marriage, and that book, or that quote book, whatever it is almost like a pressure, like you're not somehow, here, let me give you this little quick solution, this little quick drug, you know, and you know what, I've tried all that. I have.
But Shalimar, you have, yes, in your writing a kind of quick solution as well, although it's an explicitly Christian one, and that is the cross. Whenever you're looking for a foundation to stand on in the midst of what you've gone through and your family's gone through, mm-hmm, you then turn, you evoke the cross. Now, what does that mean to you? Because what I wanted you to do at that moment is to explain more about why you invoke the cross and why that answers the question.
The cross, because I've tried what the world has offered too many times, and the only solution for me is the cross. And that was even
But what does that mean, Shalimar, to you? Explain more.
It means that, let me think here on the fly. It means that if my God saw, if that was the solution that he chose to embrace his cross, which was beautifully portrayed in the movie The Passion of the Christ and in Catherine Emmerich's book, if he chose it, why am I trying to choose something less? And I am a bit radical that way, and I think
that's very well said. I mean, now you actually gave me an answer that makes me want to ponder further. But you're not saying that Christ wants us all to become masochists, do you?
No, absolutely not.
Embracing the cross mean in practical terms?
It means embracing my cross. He hasn't asked me, praise God, to go through what he went through, but he's asking me to embrace a nasty, dirty house, a shower towel, because I couldn't get my act together before 3 o'clock today. He's asking me to embrace dirty diapers. He's asking me to embrace my marriage when it's not so frou-frou and fluffy. He's asking me to embrace doing menial chores that nobody would ever see or care about. Nobody can see it. There's no, oh, there she is. There she, you know, walking down to get her golden globe. He's asking me to live a life in privacy. You know, honestly, like
I really hope that one day you'll win an award like that, so you'll have to you'll have to not only take back what you're saying, but you'll have to explain why you're enjoying it, you know.
Oh, I might give you the Golden Globe.
First. So for you, the cross stands for the way we actually experience life from day to day.
Yeah.
And there are ups and downs, and there are a lot of downs, and there are a lot of times when you're down for a long time.
Yes.
And then you say to each other, we're here. I mean, you resolve it simply your commitment and so forth. But you're saying that embrace the cross means this is what we should expect from life. We should expect suffering. We should expect failure. And we should expect the world's scorn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a very wise man telling me one time, when I was at a very successful point in my life, very successful, far beyond what I ever expected, the devil will get you. The devil will figure out how to hurt you because your success has made you a target.
Yes.
For suffering. And he was absolutely right. Because those times of success, they're aberrations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't the norm. But and what you're saying is the appearance that we give on social media makes those moments the norm to represent the totality, and they're not.
Wow.
My son just graduated from West Point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, or look at my daughter, one, you know, best gymnast, or and that's all good, right?
Right.
But that's not
but
the norm we live through. Those things happen now and then, right?
Correct.
What happens to the young gymnast who breaks her back on the beam, you know, and is paralyzed for the rest of her life?
You know what? People want the likes. They want the pluses. They want to. I love what you're saying. That they want to show as that is their life, but yet that is such a tiny fraction. Most of it is just day-to-day humdrum lives, and we do. I'm gonna say myself. I do everything to try to keep avoiding the humdrum, but really, that's the hardest thing to embrace. And I've spoken about this with my older children, that it seems so glamorous. Oh, I'm gonna be a martyr for Christ. Oh, yes, like St. Peter, and then. Yeah, but I can't seem to vacuum because, oh, well, I mean, I can't do the teeniest thing for the Lord because that's too disgusting. I'm not picking up that dead insect that just, oh, whoa, that's too much. But yet here I am saying I want to be a martyr for Christ. I can't put up with my situation in my family. Oh, my husband, a teenager, I love my children, but you know, there's these moments I can't even handle this, but yet here I am saying that I want this almost a glamour sainthood that exists too in social media very much of the time. You know, oh, I'm just going to sacrifice, I'm just going to offer, and I'm sure I'm guilty of all of these things.
I pass over all that. I, you know, to me it's just like, okay, who are you really? You know, I get that you have faith, I get all that, but you're not telling me anything about yourself. You went through 3 years of atheism. Now, what's so interesting about that statement is that most people would say they fell away or they weren't sure, but you actually use the word atheism. How did that happen?
And this is going to be in this up and coming wonderful book by Pat Madrid, which I'm sure has many great other stories as well. I was kicked out by my family actually for not obeying their family rules. Fair enough, and they were mortal sin rules. And I was doing drugs. I was having my boyfriend in my room, and he happened to be an atheist. And in Oxford, England, atheism is real. It is so much more than what we have here in America.
You were in Oxford?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing at Oxford?
I was, I moved over there with my family because my father, very respectable man, is retired Air Force. So that was, at the advice of, at the time, Bishop Chaput, he's now Archbishop Chaput, he advised, I was only 18, and it was like, do I live on my own in America while my whole family moves to England, or do I go with my...
So you ran into an undergraduate philosophy major at Oxford who turned you into an atheist?
I actually ran into him as a nurse assistant. We were both nurse assistants at a nursing home. And, he went for me. There were like 26 single beautiful women in this place, all British. And what you said when the devil's going to get you, I fell so hard. I was giving chastity rallies. I was running pro-life groups at 15.
Uh-oh. You must have been wearing Shalimar.
I was wearing Shalom. That's probably what it was. And
he had one of those cute British accents, right?
Yes, but he had everything of the world. Absolutely gorgeous. He was half Egyptian, so he was just exotic. Arabic, British. I mean, it's just an exotic person.
They happen to be millionaires. No wonder you became an atheist. I mean,
oh my goodness gracious!
Were you really an atheist, or you were pretending to be an atheist?
When my family actually, looking back, it's always different. 2020, you know, hindsight. My family held to their standards of how they were raising our family. I have two younger siblings, and I just decided I fell for him more than I did for the faith. And there was a point in time where all I could see was hypocrisy. That's what I could see from my teenage eyes at 18. And I just thought it all suddenly appeared to be a joke, the whole thing. And I went to the, my family was having some struggles at the time. Like I said, I was 18. I had two younger siblings. And, by the way, my family and I, we're all very close and we're all good. So it's all good, but, lots of healing. But I was kind of flirting. I was kind of in between both of the faith, and then I was getting into debates, atheism versus God and all of this. And I'm telling you, when you sit where, you know, J.R. Tolkien sat and had these debates, and C.S. Lewis, and you're at Cambridge and Oxford, it's like the center. Darwin, I mean, and I had studied Darwin. I had done papers on Darwin and proved him wrong. Back when I was only like 16, and I was a thinker, but their arguments were so profound.
You needed me there to take those guys on.
I really did. Where were you?
I'm quite a bit older than you are, but I went through that with the British philosopher Bertrand Russell. When I was in college, but I thought Russell's book, Why I Am Not a Christian, was actually very superficial and very, very unconvincing. And then when I listened, there's actually a tape of his, Bertrand Russell's debate with the great Jesuit historian, Father Copleston, who wrote A History of Philosophy. And Copleston just destroyed him.
Wow.
Now, I might add here that my great-aunt Lucille dated Bertrand Russell back in the 30s.
Oh, wow!
This was after he was divorced, by the way. But now, you know, it's become very fashionable to be an atheist. And, again, the arguments continue to be quite superficial. What they try to do is they take the Bible literally, and then they find all kind of Bible verses that contradict each other and say, so there, you know. Well, if they knew how to read the Bible properly, they wouldn't do that.
Exactly. They take it literally instead of literarily. And with the eyes of faith, though, in my youth, I will say that. I'll make that excuse because as youth, there was brokenness, there was hurt, there was things that needed to be healed. And I felt that the hypocrisy, I was looking at the people, I wasn't looking at Christ, and then I see this other feminist atheist, and they loved each other. They were loving, and I thought,
that's exactly how I converted to Christianity, the same way. When I was a college junior, I saw this group that loved each other, and I wanted to be part of that.
Yes.
So,
well, what I thought was love actually was not love in our sense, and they actually, in the end, I won the debate. I left the person, and I hope that he's very successful. I know that he was married last I checked. Was probably about 10 years ago, and I hope that all.
Well, maybe he'll hear this program.
Maybe.
What do you want to say? Let's pretend that he's listening. What do you want to say to him?
I want to say thank you to him for reinforcing why God is real. He is real. And the arguments for God far outweigh the arguments against him. It takes much more faith to not believe in God than to believe in him. Even when I agree with that. I like to debate without religion, without saying, oh, well, the catechism says this or the Bible says that. When we come down to the basic truths, there are some that can be very, like, probably need a theologian who's a lot better at debating, but comparing to myself. But there are, when it comes down to it, what is the reason for love? And that is the answer that he could not answer, the other boyfriend. And he said, the procreation of a species. I said, but why? God is the answer to the why. The atheists don't have the answer to the why. And that's where I thought, okay, I'm just going to talk on this. And believe me, there were other atheist friends. They were really baffled when I got on the plane with $50 in my pocket to go do a mission. They're like, what on earth are you doing? I just said, I don't know. I still don't know. It was like moving to Ohio. I'm not really sure, but the voice was so loud in my head. Like, just get out, just go. You know I'm here. You know me. I heard him. I'm like, okay, and I'm not frou-frou. I'm not one of those frou-frou people. No,
you're definitely not frou-frou.
Not.
I'm tempted to look up the origin of that. But on your blog, you write, as transparent as I am, I have skeletons. You're so transparent, I can't imagine any skeletons worth mentioning that you haven't mentioned.
No, if I do have a skeleton, the only reason it would be there would be if I revealed that it would be something that is related to my family, my extended family, or somebody that it would hurt. And I don't believe there's a point in revealing things for the purpose of hurting another or...
You discuss calumny on your blog. I think it's a very very prudent discussion of calumny.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of where is the line between needing to know or letting other people know what you know and not needing?
Just gossip, and boy, it can destroy. I've been through character assassinations a couple of times. I've been on the receiving end, like when you said you'll become a target.
Oh yeah. Well, I went through that I went through that for 5 years. And just
My goodness!
Once it gets going, it just doesn't stop. It has a life of its own.
I can't imagine. Oh my goodness! Oh dear Lord! I'm praying right now. Like I still love I hope his respite for us or for me lasts longer. It is the most difficult thing. It's difficult after having birth naturally 10 children. I can tell you, the assassination of character is more difficult pain. Depression is more difficult pain than anything physical. I can tell you.
I agree completely. No, it was a trauma in my life that will always be me, always be part of me. And but you know, if I were to take anything from you, if I had early in my life had a more transparent style, you know, more upfront, then I wouldn't have been as vulnerable to that. I mean, I was thinking, how could anybody assassinate you? I mean, you put it all out there. I mean, it's not like anybody, you know, it's you've admit to it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you've cheated the IRS or something, but that's, you know.
People, you know, it's so unique to each person how we're attacked. It's so unique. And you can be, I mean, again, the saints, it's like, how do they find something on Jesus Christ? I mean, it's like, how do they find anything on these saints? How do they find anything on St. Padre Pio? They're gonna find, it's so unique. And that is the main thing I have to focus on, especially as someone who has suffered through depression. I know I'm actually comforted that you know the struggle is the battle against fear. You know, what can they take? What can they do? And when you stand for truth, there is always a risk. And that's what's tough, especially when you're dealing with life issues and any issues. When you're vulnerable, even if you're completely in the truth and you have zero skeletons, in the sense that Christ was vulnerable on the cross. It's like all of that, his vulnerability. How is he vulnerable when he has
perfect innocence strung up, nailed to the cross?
Yes.
By the powers that be. Now I'm talking with Shalimar Masters. Shalimar is married to Corey, an MBA, and needs a job in somewhere in Northeast Ohio. And her website is called lifevictorious.com. Well worth visiting. Wonderful blogs there. But her reversion story is coming out as a chapter in a book from Sophia Press entitled Surprised by Life and edited by Patrick Madrid. We got a few minutes left. Tell us about what it's like to go to Christ the Bridegroom Monastery there.
I can sum it up, heaven. It is, when you go there, these nuns not only take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, they also take a vow of hospitality. And you got to experience a hug from one of these sisters. They are so beautiful. They're so beautiful. They're young. They're vibrant. There are so many vocations. What St. John Paul the Great, what he said about the springtime of evangelization, we're in it. And these young people are everywhere. Ohio is kind of bursting with it. There's not a church here. There's a church a couple miles down the road that's Catholic. It's beautiful. Christ the Bridegroom, if you ever get a chance to visit, it is well worth it. That the Amish buggies go by, that you see nuns going across the road to their chapel. It's absolutely
beautiful. Sounds like perfect for a wandering photographer.
It's such a neat, I don't want to say it's not a contradiction, but it's such a neat.
It's a juxtaposition.
There you go. There's the word. It's just like, this is so interesting. Yeah, for you see these Amish people and then these nuns. Like people live in harmony. It's really a beautiful. There's peace. There's peace. There's beauty, and there's a beautiful history to the monastery. So / convent. You know, for Roman Catholic, we call it a convent. Absolutely beautiful.
Wonderful. Now, Shalimar, we've come to the end of our time, and. You've been an absolute delight, and I look forward to having you on again. Sometime we'll talk about that chapter in the book, and I'll continue to bug you about writing more. So thanks again for being on Church and Culture. To all of you listening, after a short break, we'll have another wonderful guest.